Blog Talk Radio.
This is Blue Water, and I'd like to thank you for joining us for our funeral service for the United States of America and much of the world tonight. We're going to be talking with, I thought you'd appreciate that, Tom. We're going to be talking with Thomas W. Chittum, author of Civil War II, and of course, we've got our good friend Badger, Mark the Badger Borchetting on the line, and say hi, fellas.
Howdy, all.
Hey, everybody.
Tom, we interviewed you about a year ago. Did Mark do your Mayan birthday reading?
Duh. I didn't read you. What's that again?
Well, apparently not. I don't think Mark was available when we interviewed you before. What he'd like to do is get your birth date, month, day, and year.
February the 28th, 1947.
Okay. What month?
Pardon?
September?
February.
Not
February. February
28th.
Okay. 28th,
47.
Okay. And see what he's going to work up your... he's going to give you some insight into why you do what you do.
Something. I don't know.
He's going to give you some insight into why you do what you do. And folks,
Well, that would be great.
I think Tom already knows that. But, Tom's birthday has a connection back to you, Otter.
Oh, is that right?
He's another eek.
Oh, you're kidding.
He's
the women see us, they go eek.
So Blue Otter's is 9 eek, and Tom's is a 3 eek.
Mother.
Huh.
What the fuck
now,
is that?
Now, the 3 eek is, in the Mayan system, there are 13 day numbers and 20 glyphs, and they cycle and form a 260 days combinations or permutations of the two cycles, 13 and 20. And the 3 is the day number, and the eek is the glyph. We'll go over a little bit about what each of the number and the glyph mean and kind of what they say. The 3 is a glyph, or number, I mean day number, that relates to the energy of creative, especially in the right brain area. So I would suspect that Tom has a lot of creative abilities, and I would say that combined with logical insights may be what helps him to write.
Does blow shit up count as being creative?
Huh?
Does liking to blow shit up count as being creative?
I couldn't quite hear that.
Maybe I said I like to blow stuff up. Does that count as being creative?
Yeah. as long as you abstractly blow it up.
Oh, okay, Roger. Okay, go on, please.
Now,
interesting.
The eek glyph is a T cross symbol.
Okay.
And that symbol is a very important symbol in many Native tribes. If you go down there to various Mayan cities and even to the Great Kiva at Chaco Canyon, you notice that the entrance coming into that Kiva at Chaco Canyon is in the shape of a T. And many of the adobe or the Pueblo things will have a T-cross window. And even in Mexico, you'll see, and more, theirs is more of a T. Sometimes the ones in the Pueblos are, the top of the T is very short, so it's, you know, you have to really look close to see it sometimes. But the T-cross is a symbol that has to do with wind energy, you know, blowing stuff up, breath, art and thinking, and it also is a day sign that relates back to Quetzalcoatl. And so it's wind, Quetzalcoatl's title of the Lord of the Wind and the Water. So you probably have some kind of connection with that as well. And you might want to contemplate what that means. So the combination of these two things basically says, you know, kind of right brain energy person that has breath, spirit energy, and also a thinker. And tend to also do things with that three energy also in service to others. So you have a little bit of things where you do things for mankind.
I appreciate it. I go to that website, Thunderbolts of the Gods, and they're very much into Native American perspective on these matters. No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
Well, we're going to do another one here, and this one's a little bit different. It's another reading with an expanded Zolk'in, and it actually has two time flows, forward and backward, and then a third position where the two time flows come together. So we're going to look at your birth here from that perspective as well, because they'll give us a little bit more information. Now, on the forward flow of time, that's going what we consider normal time, just the way it moves from now to the future. And the backward flow is coming from the next world cycle into our world cycle, so it's moving from our perception backward in time. So we'll do the forward flow first. And on this flow, It talks about energy of exploring, working to produce or create wakefulness or awaken people. Things that have to do with prophecy, things that have to do with oneness, like in Lakesh in the Mayan sense, they say for the word for oneness. And it also has some energies here, partner energies of synchronicity, movement of things, and thought energy again. So this is basically saying that you have the ability to explore, work with thought, and use this to kind of create a sense of wakefulness or waking up. And there's an aspect of prophecy here, too. Now, another flow coming backward, and this is energy that you might have noticed getting more predominant in your life in the recent years, especially since anywhere from around 1997, 1998, maybe even a few years before that. And that energy is unveiling, strengthening for transformation of things, change in things, death or transformation through death is a transformation process. Has the energies of things that have to do with polarity, positive, negative stuff, a lot of that. And it's working in with that eek energy that we talked with before, breath, spirit, prayer, and things like that. And it's in a bigger cycle that has to do with things about sacred life, which is probably why, you know, this whole thing about the Native American website and things you mentioned is probably, you've probably been pulling into stuff like that more and more and more. So
it's right about my pay grade. The only even close to religious site I go to is that one called Thunderbolts of the Gods, and I recommend it for everyone because they reference a lot of the same things that you're talking about, and trying to and they try to explain it to some schmuck like me who doesn't have very much of a background in that kind of thing. So it's a good site. Well, I got to say it. You know, I think about this religious stuff sometimes. Like statistically, I got 15 years left. And then I'm dead forever. So what I do between now and then, I let it rip, man. I wish I was young enough to fight it, and I would go somewhere and be a mercenary again, but I'm too damn old.
Well, I'll tell you. If there was a
people that are mercenaries and are do what you do and like doing it, death usually doesn't stop them from doing it again.
If there's hey, Mark. Is there a Mayan Mayan sign that corresponds with the poker hand aces and eights?
What's that?
That's the dead man's hand in poker.
Think about that one a little bit.
And Tom will tell you about that. They have a special decoration. He'll tell you about. But Tom's going to tell us about military history.
We haven't gone through the one part yet.
Keep going, Mark. I'm sorry.
Okay. So where these two come together and creates a unity point or a zero point or a bridge between worlds. It's talking about. So this is kind of for you. This is how you move from one world or one cycle and move through cycles. And it's a glyph that has to do with teaching, catalyzing things, family, resurrection of things, community, cooperation, eagle energy. So watch out for things that have to deal with an eagle power, which would relate to things of mind, vision, revelations, and things like that. It's also on a sign that's called Quok, which is the storm glyph, and this particular glyph comes up a lot with the white buffalo. So I would suggest that it might be interesting for you to go learn some things about the white buffalo.
I thought those things were bad news. Every time one showed up, everything goes to hell.
No, actually, it's sort of, in a way, it's a good sign. The white buffalo calf woman, which is where it was tied in with this, she said that she would return, and she specifically said she was associated with world cycles and world ages, and she would return each time. So, you know, when these white buffalo appear, they Native people look at this as kind of a confirmation of her promise, because she would say that these white buffalo would be born before her return, so there'd be a sign that she was coming.
Huh.
So it's, in a way, a sort of a positive thing. Now, it doesn't mean that when she, you know, comes that there aren't some problems happening, because last time she came, you know, they were having some problems with starvation and all kinds of other things were going on.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rough.
Yeah. So, but, you know, somehow they look at it, you know, it's positive. She'll get us through it and be a guiding spirit through it. So it's coming up, so I think it would be a good thing for you to maybe read about a little bit. You can find stuff on the Internet. Do a search on Miracle. That was one of the first white buffaloes born in Janesville, Wisconsin, back in 1994. Might be interesting for you to read it about a little bit and contemplate it, because it might help you.
Okay, sure. Yeah, okay, white buffalo. That's easy enough to remember.
Yeah.
Wow, sounds like a brand of whiskey. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can go into business doing that.
All levity aside, huh? Well, Tom's going to tell us about market cycles and Ukraine and prepping for World War III, and we're just going to turn him loose.
Just stop everything, panic, and head for the hills. That's what I'm doing. I'm giving myself a year to wind up everything and get the hell out of Vancouver and be living out in the hills outside of Vancouver.
Well, it's a good place. Good as any. Yeah. And I know where I know your sentiments. I know there was one scene in Thunderheart that's kind of apropos. I'll play it. 32 seconds.
Sometimes they have to kill him. They have to kill him. Because they can't break off spirit. We choose to write to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power. It's about power.
That's right.
That's
why we got to head for the hills once in a while.
Hey,
even Justice Scalia said it's time to rebel.
Time to rebel.
So tell us all about
it,
Tom.
I'm not rebelling. I'm Chicken Little. I'm heading for the hills. I'm 67
years old. Oh, me too.
I'm deaf. I'm half blind. I don't even give a F-U-C-K in the first place anyway, so count me out, whatever it is. I just got to see it.
Absolutely. Well, tell us what you know.
Okay, here's my worst fear thing that's bearing down. It's this Ukraine thing. These people in London and New York and Wall Street are just plain freaking crazy. They're rolling the dice and blowing up the whole freaking planet. They're not supposed to do that. If they knock over some banana stand down in the Caribbean, who cares? Things go on. They kill a few thousand, more or less. Nobody really gives a shit. This time they won't blow up the fucking world.
Well, don't hold back.
Hey, Tom, did
you see the
information about what the IMF just did yesterday or today?
Oh, did they, what was it this time?
They're saying that unless Ukraine does their military actions or whatever it is to protect themselves or put up some kind of fight or whatever, that their $17 billion that IMF was going to give them, they're not going to give it to them.
these Ukrainians,
I mean, they're openly
slow,
saying
man.
This.
This is a color revolution. It's instigated by the usual people for the usual intentions, and it's got nothing to do with helping the people of Ukraine who will be crushed.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for them. Oh, when are they going to have one of these color revolutions over here? Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just saying, I wonder if maybe someday they're going to have a color revolution over here.
Well, I don't know. Maybe people have to pay as much for their gas and stuff as the Ukrainians. Maybe they will.
I hope to be out on the hills, man. There's some great hills around here, man. You can drive down through woods in Washington State, and it wouldn't surprise me if I saw a dinosaur walking across the road. This place is still remote and far back in time. Beautiful.
Well,
it's out here pretty mellow too.
You know how to dig, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a great place for me. I mean, I'm 67 years old. I can't handle any crap anymore. So I come out here and nobody hassles me. Everything's fine. I'm even getting married, man. I'm making my last stand up there in the hills. I'm going to get a 7.62 that Russian battle rifle, 7.62 times 54 CA guy. I think you pronounce it. Those are nice.
Yeah.
I already got a 45. That's mostly just for show, though. I ain't going to participate in this crap. I'm going to be so far out in the hills, they'll have to use a 175 to even get close to me.
Better to do like nature does. You hide. Camouflage and hide.
Oh, yeah. I've been through that. Like, I saw what happened over there in Yugoslavia. Those poor people. Oh, brother,
yeah.
You don't want to be in that place for about, like, 2 years. This is like the pits. Even if nobody's shooting at you, you're still, it's like living in a huge garbage dump with dogs running all over the place.
And snipers in every area of the building.
Yeah. You know, all the fun stuff. Even if it's not actually being fought over. La, la, la.
Yeah. Well, you've...
I'm trying to position something here. Hang on just a second here.
That's okay. Hey, while you're doing that, I'm going to play the future national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Here it goes.
Mm-hmm.
National anthem to the tune of the Russian national anthem. Yes, sir.
I like Russian music, man.
Yeah, that's quite a rousing national anthem they've got over there, isn't it? Yeah, do svidaniya. Well, what do you think, Don?
When are they going to burn down the first city, lock, stock, and barrel? Just like on a guess, which one do you think will go? Lock, stock, and barrel, burn all the way down the ground.
Chicago. Chicago, for sure.
Okay. And you, sir? Chicago and...
Well, they were sort of... I mean, it wouldn't take much. Someone just have to light a match, and Detroit would already prepped, right?
My all-time favorite is L.A.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that place. Anybody who ever lived out there usually wants to burn it down in any way.
Oh,
because
Rancho Cucamonga is burning down right now.
Oh, yeah? What's their problem?
Oh, well, the country, they don't have any water to fight the fires out there anymore.
Oh.
Well, they've been releasing it all into the Sacramento River, so those little teeny fish, whatever they are, you know, and... Growing food for the whole world isn't important as long as those fish get to their little feelers and taken care of.
When I was living in Maryland, I wanted to move to the West Coast. I wanted to move to California, but no way. Those guys are bankrupt. It's being looted. It's being overrun by barbarians. They might as well give it back to the Cougars and Wildcats and Buffaloes or whatever. Forget about it. It's over, over. Call in like a broken arrow.
Well, tell everybody about your studies into market forces and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. I have a background in data processing. I used to be a computer programmer. I worked for financial institutions in New York and the West Coast and other major swindle areas. And I'm now reading this book called Dark Pools about the computerization of the Wall Street and the stock market, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm only about halfway through. And all these stocks today are traded by what they call a matching engine or a computer program, not unlike the stuff that I wrote, that takes all the orders, all the buy orders, and sells them, and sell orders and matches them up. That's what they call a matching engine. Now, guess what? It's crooked as hell. It's not fair. Everybody jumps the queue, and you can bribe the guy who runs the matching engine, and so on and so forth. It's completely automated sheep shearing and rape is what it is.
Have you seen that book, The Flash Boys, about the high frequency trading?
I'm reading that one too.
Yeah.
But the Dark Pools one is the main one. That's where the most of the money is, in that matching engine thing. If you own the matching engine, you're king of the world. Just show me who owns the matching engine, and that's the man.
Yep.
We'll never know. We'll never know if there is one matching engine. Darn
well,
interesting.
So do you think, Tom, that they're going to do something with creating like a false flag cyber attack or something?
They seem to do it all the time. You know, just one after another, whether it's Sandy Hook or something in the Ukraine or blah, blah, blah. I just want to go hide somewhere. This is going to be my last interview. I'm going to get married. I'm going to drop out. I'm going to head for the damn hills. Unplug from everything. No kidding. I'm still not like crap in the stock market, man.
Yeah.
I'll lose about $6,000 bucks, Tom Holland.
Well, there's lots of real estate out there at the east side of Mount St. Helens now. It's all been cleared for you.
I love driving out through there, man. But it's like full of cougars and bears and psychotic weirdos on bicycles, man.
Don't even have to cut your own firewood. It's all laying dead there for you.
I don't think Red Elk's prognosis for that area was very good either, was it?
Well, the real volcanic action is supposed to take place up further up the coast, Mount Adams.
Oh, yeah, that's way east of here. There's only one or two places where you can see it from Vancouver.
I haven't
been out there yet.
Mount St. Helens is probably pretty good. It's probably a pretty safe place because it's already gone off. So the other, it's probably a pretty safe place.
Yeah, but I saw something just here yesterday or today. Mount St. Helens magma pool's starting to build right now.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
it may not
cool.
be so safe.
I got this
Tom.
Cool story to tell you about Mount St. Helens with a Native American theme. So just give me a couple of minutes here, okay?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, out to the east of Mount St. Helens is the most godforsaken fucking place in all of Washington State. It ain't worth nothing. It's like a high, cold desert in the mountains. The only thing that survived there is goats, and then the Indians, after they chased all the Indians off, so the Indians wind up living next to the goats up here in this place called the Goat Rock Mountains. So the reservation is right next to the Goat Rocks because that's where they both wound up because everything else was robbed from them. And it's some of the most scenic crap. Now they got all the scenic stuff, and I think they got a casino, too. I don't know how they're making out these days, but I think they moved up a notch or two. It wasn't like the old days when they had Jack Hall. They got, like, tourism and a casino now.
Mm.
And the goats, I guess they're doing okay.
Yeah, they'll survive.
That's a natural home anyway.
If you really want to survive, hang around with goats. They'll provide you with milk, meat, and clothing. Anything you need, just follow a goat. You'll be all right.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Most of us.
It's actually
the
goat milk.
Smashing down doors in my rival button.
Goat milk is actually the only milk that's ordained for, other than human milk, that's ordained for human use. The fat globules are just as small as human milk, so it goes through the blood-brain barrier, provides you energy very quickly.
Okay.
Good
easy
stuff.
Easy to digest, too.
Yeah, just don't drop a hair in it while you're, you know, just got to be very clean when you're milking it. And well, that's great stuff.
I'm afraid the stock market's going to crash. I'm selling all my stock. I sold $1,000 worth yesterday.
Yeah, tell them about your blog. You're on Weebly.
My what? My what, sir?
Your blog on Weebly. Your financial blog.
Oh, I don't. That's not active anymore.
Oh,
I don't write. I I've been high for the last year. I do nothing but smoke dope and worry. Okay, and listen to the financial pages. I don't want to say anything more about it because I don't want to attract undue attention to you or any of your listeners because it's, like, different out here. You know, nobody gives a crap. Up in Seattle, the cops are handling bags of Doritos to potheads. For real. It's a goodwill gesture.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, they had, like, a marijuana independence day, and the cops started coming down busting, came down and handing out bags of Doritos, you know, little, like, those little 4-ounce bags or whatever. Like, have a nice day. Ha! Just don't smoke it in, like, within 5 minutes of a dynamite factory or something. I don't know, but there are laws. I don't pay attention because I just smoke in my apartment.
Well, my son's up there somewhere in that bed.
Just north of where I live, I call it Pennsylvania because there's a whole bunch of head shops up there. I don't go in there except to buy papers and just to check out, but they never have any actual stuff. They're just still talking about it. Talk. Man, I smoked up my friend's entire crop. His entire crop, sir, at $100 an ounce. Then I'm
Jeez.
Smoking up another one. I buy this stuff by the crop. I smoke it so much.
Well, keep your frontal lobe lit up. It'll help you write that. I'll help you write that last book.
So, Tom, you think that's going to play a part in the whole thing about this second Civil War that you wrote about?
Okay, here's my best guess that has remained the same ever since I wrote the book, that it will start in the Southwest, most likely in Los Angeles, because of an economic collapse and millions and millions of starving people right there concentrated in that one place, who are basically disaffected because they will be turned to separatism, Hispanic separatism, all sound and all that sort of thing. That's where it really blew up first. I still think that's the way it'll go.
There's like 50 million people in Southern California.
Huh, who knows? I'm afraid to go there anymore. I won't even drive through it. Nice people.
Oh,
I don't want to die.
I was raised down there. I'm not going back there.
And what else? I'm worried about the loss of the dollar as a reserve currency or World War III in Ukraine. It just seems to get worse all the time.
Well, I ran across
so many people.
I ran across an interesting little thing. Night before last, a guy who's been dead for about 20 years appeared to me in a dream. His last name was Jordan. So I decided to Google him because I had heard that a guy named Jordan had compiled a list of prophecies back in the mid-80s. And in the process, kind of funny the way Creator leads you to think, I found an account of a dream that a guy in Houston had about the way things are going to go down. And this is 2 years ago. This is before any of this stuff about Russia happened. But he said, when you see Russia start to make noises about expanding back to its old glory. He says that'll be right before India and Pakistan go to war and before Iran and Iraq and all that stuff. But I thought, wow, that's really interesting because who would have thought that Russia would want to be expansionist again? Well, other than the fact
that... Oh, boy.
Yeah, other than the fact that U.S. foreign policy is just was going to allow anybody to do anything. But, yeah, I thought, wow, man, that's interesting. So, yeah, there are signs. If you look around for them, you can kind of figure out where you are. Pretty late in the scenario, I think.
I feel sorry for these young people. At least times were rough when I was a youngster, but at least there was hope. Now it's over, Rover. You are going to have to head for the hills.
Well, yeah. Isn't your motto, you know, abandon hope, all ye who enter here?
Yeah. I just wanted to just come out and say it because I'm one person who pays attention to this, and I think my book has a lot of traction with some people because a lot of the things that I spoke about have gotten worse, and they indicate which direction we are, in fact, going.
Well, you're a prophet, but you're the only agnostic prophet I know of. So that makes you very objective. So you don't have any axes to grind.
Like W.C. Fields, he hated everybody equally.
Yeah, you know.
Hey,
other than
biting down this one. My wife is from Kenya. I'm going to get married to this girl from Kenya.
Oh, great. That's super. Well, maybe you'll be a cousin-in-law of our great leader.
Yeah, I'm not sure which tribe she's from. I don't know. They got different tribes over there, you know, like Arapahoes and Navajos and that kind of horse shit. So I don't know which one she's from yet. Let's see. There was the Mau Mau and the Tok Tok, who were kind of like the Mau Mau, except they like to smoke, or something like that. Anyway, if I ever get it started, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay. tell her Jumbo for me. Just tell her Blue Eyes said Jumbo.
Will do.
Has she taught you that much Swahili yet?
Pardon me?
Has she taught you any Swahili yet?
Talk to me what? I'm sorry, I can't hear you, sir.
Has she taught you any of the Kenyan language, Swahili?
No, only in English.
Okay.
She sounds
Jumbo.
Like
Jumbo means hello. How are you?
Oh, okay. I'll try that on her. Booga booga.
Well,
I'd call her an urbanized hillbilly.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, you're a Cherokee. That's the definition of a Cherokee. Urbanized hillbilly.
Yeah, she is like she sent me a picture of her grandmother from out in the sticks who she went to visit, and her grandmother is 90 years old. Now, she's a city girl. She speaks English, and she doesn't know anything about how to live out in the sticks. She doesn't even like to go out there. It's just like the hillbillies that come here to work in Detroit City. It's the same damn thing.
Uh-huh.
Nairobi's got like, I don't know, at least 1 million people, maybe 3 million. It is a big damn city.
Well, you're going to have to go visit. Since you... You broke that. What's that? What's that act that they can? Since you've been to war torn areas, that they could prevent you from leaving the country or something?
Not as far as I know. I've got a passport
I got
and all that.
I've got a friend that back in the mid '80s, he was serving under Greitz in. I want to say Nicaragua, and one of his friends got grabbed. During the Contra thing, dragged across the border. And a guy who's now one of the editors for Soldier of Fortune and a couple other guys went over there and grabbed him, and which is against the law. So they got charged with a certain act of Congress. So they're banned from going into any war-torn areas. I was wondering because of your background if they'd ever pin that old donkey on you.
Yeah. I wish I were young again, but I'm not. Let's see. I did buy me a GAT when I came out here. I got me a 45 caliber pistol, which is a Springfield Arms, made in Croatia, 45 caliber pistol, the XDM they call it. 12 shot.
Really?
Clip. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Croatia, huh?
Yeah, yeah, it's made in Croatia. They did have a thriving arms industry over there under Tito, and they had some good quality equipment, so now they're just using it to make guns to sell Americans and where else I can flog them.
Well, you've got an emotional attachment to that area, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I liked the Croatians. They were cool people, better than Americans. I still
What's that
I'm
old,
in contact with one.
What's that old saying? Join the army, travel the world, meet interesting people, and kill them?
Yeah, well, those were the Serbs on the other side.
Okay.
But, you know, I was with the Croatians. They were like my brothers in arms. Yeah, so I was in, I knew some Croatians. Yeah, still know one.
Do they make any, like, AK-47 clones or anything else that's interesting?
Oh, boy. They made a lot of little machine pistols. I know they made a lot of those during the war. Before the war, I think they made just about everything from heavy artillery to AK-47s and you name it. They had a real big arms industry. Pretty sure.
I'm sure they did. Yes, sir.
Wow, that was a place.
Yeah.
Can I tell you some observations I brought back from Croatia?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, you know, I'm not advocating this crap, but if you want to punch above your weight in a situation like that, what made the difference in Croatia was initially was snipers. The first two Federal Army barracks that were captured from the Yugoslav Army by the Croatian rebels were captured basically by the use of sniper rifles. I was stationed at one of them. There was a small military base just across the road. From the military base, there was a cemetery on a hill where the Croatian police stationed themselves with sniper scopes and AK-47s and brought the military base under siege, and they couldn't move inside the base because if they did, they were dead. It was only about a 400-meter shot. That's how they got that military base to surrender. About 20 miles away in Gospic, it was the same thing again, but on a larger scale. And that military base, the federal troops actually had tanks, at least a dozen. I saw myself, but the Croatian cops with sniper rifles were able to paralyze the whole base. They couldn't even get out of the barracks into the stinking tanks without getting a bullet through their head, even at night, because they had night vision. It was a revolution by the cops. Mainly, it was the Croatian cops who took both of these federal military bases under siege with nothing but sniper rifles and won.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, that's how,
above your weight.
Fidel Castro took over the countryside. He went from plantation to plantation and with sniper rifles.
And when I read about these liberals in the newspaper and thing wanting to ban assault rifles, say, no, please, no, you got it all wrong. If you want to defuse a war in this country, ban telescopic sights, because that's what made the difference in Yugoslavia.
There was actually one senator that suggested that a few years back.
And the other interesting parallel between Yugoslavia and Croatia was the composition of the armed forces. Like, their federal military over there was composed of different nationalities, just like our federal military is composed of different nationalities here. However, also like here, Croatia and here, are the local police generally are predominantly from one tribal group, to use a kind of loose term, one tribal group. And the problem was that caused in Croatia is the local cops there surrounding those military bases, they were all Croatians, and they didn't like Serbs who were in charge of the military bases. They were an invading force as far as they're concerned, so they kicked them out. We got the same structure problem in our armed group here as they had in Yugoslavia.
Uh-huh. So there's a parallel. History repeats itself.
Yeah, most people wouldn't even think of that. But I do. I saw that place go to hell. I saw the aftermath, actually.
Now, see, you were with some volunteers from the Netherlands, as I recall.
Yeah, at one point, yeah. Yeah, I was a soldier in the Croatian Army. At one point, I was with mostly Dutch guys, yeah.
Interesting. What on earth possessed you? What on earth possessed you? What possessed you to go over there?
I think I'm insane. That's what the shrinks of VA said. I'm a bipolar, paranoid, schizophrenic. That's a professional opinion. Myself, I like it. I mean, I just quite like it. You know, some people they want to go race a go-kart or some bullshit like that. But if you're going to some danger, just, you know, pull out all the fucking stuff, man.
Well, you know, every time they rewrite the DSM-4, I mean, they've got all kinds of new things. I mean, if a kid gets bored, that's a mental illness now. If he goes to the bathroom, that's a new mental illness. So it doesn't matter what you do, they're going to classify you with some kind of mental illness. That's what they did in Russia. And back in the middle 80s, there was a guy by the name of Yuri Bezmenov that he defected. He came over, toured the whole country, and he told everybody that he was part of the planners that planned what was going to happen. He said, what you're going to see in the next 20, 30 years is the United States will become more like Russia, and Russia will become more like the United States. And everybody laughed at
him.
4 years later, the wall came down, and that's exactly what's happened. We're becoming more and more like a police state. And now Russia's becoming less like a police state, and they're getting more into religion, and we're getting less into religion than we were. Bezmenov, Google his name, B-E-S-M-E-N-O-V, Yuri, Y-U-R-I. There's lots of YouTube videos of the guy. My second wife met him back in the And there have been others.
Can I tell you a real trippy story from Croatian Army days?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a real headbanger, man. Have you seen the pop star Billy Idol? His costume with his leather jacket and his spiked hair and all this shit. Yeah, and then chains and all that bullshit. Well, one night in the fucking Merc barracks over in the Croatian Army, during that war, two guys walked in, and some other Croatians, and the two guys were just dressed like Billy Idol. They weren't dressed in military uniforms. They looked like they were in fucking just like Billy Idol, punk rock star uniforms. Little bad looking motherfuckers. Now, what are those two motherfuckers doing here? This is a fucking military barracks. And they were sitting around, you know, they were smoking dope and drinking and whatever. And yeah, I came to find out what these guys were, is they were like professional torturers. They were Croatian Army soldiers, and they were professional torturers, and their job were torturing people. And because they like Billy Idol and his music, they would, you know, play a little music while they were torturing these fuckers. And then when they were through, they would cut their fucking throats. And that's what they
did. Real family guys.
Oh, fun guy. Yeah, had some drinks with him, yeah.
Just kind of guy you want to marry your sister off to.
But that's the way it was. I mean, you know, most of us didn't have anything to do with that crap.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I bet you're a real fan of the TV series The Revolution.
I never heard of it. What is it? No, I don't have a TV, man.
Oh, well, no wonder. Okay. Well, it's on Tuesday nights, I guess, on CBS. It's about something happens and the grid goes down. For like 10 years. And it's all about how the country breaks up into regional republics, which are the republics in name only, their military juntas. And kind of who's fighting against who. And then a bunch of guys come up from Guantanamo claiming to be patriots. And these guys are the nastiest people you've ever. And they fly the American flag. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and you know, and Jericho. I'm the TV series Jericho. If you had a TV, I bet you like that.
Yeah, those End of the World movies are kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah, Red Dawn. They did. They remade Red Dawn right up in the Tacoma area, so that was kind of interesting. But, well, yeah, you pointed out, you know, the way the United States has projected military power. Maybe you want to speak to how Obama has been gutting the military and kind of reorganizing things.
My guess is Obama has nothing to do with nothing. He's just a guy they put in front of a camera. And that the people in charge are the same people who have been in charge, the Rothschilds and Warburgs and Rockefellers and the Barings and the blah, 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 whoever. And I can't give you any rational account of why they're doing all these reckless things, because nothing happens without their permission at the very least.
I know why.
I think, why? Tell me.
Well, they know that they have drugged this thing out just so long, and they know it can only go so long. And they're going to collapse it
on their terms.
Before it collapses on some other terms, at least they'll have some control over the collapse.
Do you think they're rolling the dice on, like, nuclear war?
Well, that's what's prophesied is going to happen.
Yeah, uh-huh. I don't know much about prophecy, but it sure looks scary. I mean, a sane person doesn't roll the dice on that unless it's like one in a million or something. This right here looks like about a 50-50 chance, and they seem to be rolling the dice all the time like a bunch of drunken sailors.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's an insult to sailors.
Yeah, well, it's, okay, I apologize to drunken sailors, like drunken bankers.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, they know what's coming. And they're just gonna, getting their mink line foxholes ready to go. And
I wonder if somewhere they don't really have a great big damn bunker somewhere they're all going to jump into just before they pull the cork on the rest of us. You know, light the fuse like in the cartoons?
Sure.
Jump in the bunker?
Yeah, and most of them are in North Carolina. And I mean, they're dug in like ticks over there. I wouldn't want to be in North Carolina because... you know, they'll have their militias around their areas, and they're dug in the Ozarks, a lot of areas. They're dug in deep. They've been doing that for a long time.
I'm afraid to even read those things on YouTube about underground bunkers anymore. They're just too scary. I mean, from my perspective, it looks like they're doing two things at the same time, roll the dice on nuclear war while digging all these bunkers. In other words, like that's just the way it is with them. That's what's for supper. Let's dig a bunch of underground shelters and then roll the dice on nuclear war. If it goes, and the bet goes the wrong way, then we just jump underground and blow up the world and we come out 20 years later. Hey, fuck them.
Well, there's one wrinkle in their plans. They're not counting on massive flooding in places that haven't been flooded, like, in several thousand years.
Well, I hope they drown like a bunch of rats, but...
they will.
This is, like, another thing that's supposed to happen.
Yeah, they will. And actually, where you moved, the surface of the Earth will probably go up 1,000 feet rather than go down, because when California goes under, Oregon and Washington are going to be riding the up elevator.
Up I can take is that down that worries me a lot.
Yeah, especially that close to the coast. But, yeah, you're in a pretty good place.
Okay, because we're only about 100 yards or 100 foot above the water. I'm not sure which, right here. I'm just about 4 miles north of the Columbia River, and it's pretty much flat all the way down to the river. It's not a big drop.
So you live pretty near the paper mill there on that side of the river, huh?
I'm not sure exactly what's there, but it's not much. If a big flood came down that river, it'd probably take most of Vancouver with it, me included.
Yeah, well, there's lots of mountain property and lots of places you can get up into the hills away from Vancouver.
Oh yeah, I want to go up around Cougar. That's just south.
There you go.
Yeah, Tanya Harding used to live there, but she moved away, so I don't have to worry about her.
Yeah, Cougar. those of us that remember the Mount St. Helens thing remember what happened with Cougar and the Tootle River. And so I imagine the real estate prices are pretty low.
Beats me. My guess is they'd be low because they're all over Washington State. There seems like a lot of abandoned old logging farms and towns and houses and whatnot. Perfectly good land.
Oh, yeah,
lots of rain. I know Orientals are buying it.
Yeah, lots of rain.
I see Orientals up here all the time. Russians, too, lots of them. Bye. Buying up all the land. Cool. Ha-ha. Maybe I can get some kind of a commission or something.
Yeah. Well, they're probably going to be looking for a leadership of the local militias, so maybe you'll fall into them.
I'm almost functionally deaf. I'm sure freezing except smoking weed.
Well, you don't need to hear anything to give orders.
Oh, yeah, right. Who's going to pay them? Hey, fuck you, old man. I think here's the only show that I ever did twice. One other. A Holy Roller did me twice. He was a Christian Holy Roller. But other than that, I never got on twice because I always get kicked off. Not even the Russians want me twice, and Russians will talk to almost any fucking buddy as long as they give them a bottle of vodka or something.
Well, it's just because you're real.
Well,
Mark.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Keep your train of thought going.
Who else gave me the boot lately? Alex Jones was going to interview. No, his sidekick, Watson. He was going to interview me, but they backed off for no specific reason. Only about 1 out of 10 of the people. Huh?
You're kidding. Joseph Paul Watson? Backed off, huh?
Yeah. They only contacted me once and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, that wilted away. So I don't even pay attention to it anymore. I'm going to drop out anyway because I can't hear. What else? Nothing else. I'm scared shitless, man. Really seriously more scared than I ever was. If we lose our status as reserve currency, this place, people are going to starve.
Oh, yeah.
And they won't take starvation.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's my number one rule of warfare, that young males will not willingly accept starvation. They'll roll the military dice against any odds, even impossible odds. And sometimes they win. And they'll do the same thing here if the government tries to cut off all the welfare after prices have gone up like 10 times or whatever, enough to starve them. They're stupid enough to try it.
Well, yeah, they taught me in school. So I've got a degree in youth leadership. And what they taught us was that a 16-and-a-half-year-old boy has absolutely no fear of death. They think they're immortal.
Yep, teenagers, young males about that age. You can always get X number and just give them AKs.
Sure.
Not so much old guys like me.
Well, they're going to be looking for somebody to bow down to. Well, you're amenable to any slave-master relationship, aren't you?
Excuse me?
You're amenable to any slave-master relationship, aren't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, how much money is involved? And which end of the stick would I be on? I mean, I wish I was younger. I was thinking about that. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. My solution party. I'm going to get myself a sports car. I got a 45 and a sports car. I'm going to get married to a black lady from Kenya. I'm going to party like an SOB smoking weed. That is my preparation, literally, for the end of the world, which I think is coming. Because I'm not your conventional prepper. You know, they want to start up cans of dog food and catapults and whatever. Screw that shit. Party. I partied through 3 wars, my man. Party through them.
Yeah. Well, that's the only way you can keep the stress down. Well, you know, a guy met up in Northern California, Happy Cap, California, was sent on quite a few black missions. And when he came back, they had given them those great big pills that would keep them awake for days and days. to bring them down, they give them opium-laced marijuana for a few days.
Good Lord.
But and it did the trick after a few days, but his CO made the mistake of saying something to him one day before he had decompressed, and he popped the guy right in the middle of the forehead. He hit him with his hand, so he got court-martialed. U.S. Army, they took full advantage of the drugs that were available on the ground. Shoot, there's so many guys that are talking about guarding opium fields in Afghanistan. And Bo Greitz, he talked about visiting Khun Sa, who told him that the Americans took over the drug trade from the British, and that Richard Armitage, who is still in the State Department, was the guy that's been buying up his crop there in the Nakheran State area of Burma, last 30 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that Armitage and that Cheney, those two guys, I believe they like to strangle people to death with their bare hands, man. No offense. I take that back. I apologize, gentlemen. But they were guys that I wouldn't want to mess with. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew a Croatian warlord one time, and one day he was short of men to plug a gap in the line against the Serbs. And so he went out to the local gypsy camp, and he told the local gypsy chief that he needed 20 young men of military age to plug this gap in line. And anybody knows about anything about gypsies knows that they hate military service above all else. And the gypsy chief said, well, if I send these 20 young men, can you guarantee me that they'll all come back alive? And the Croatian warlord said, no, I can't guarantee you that, but I will guarantee you this. If there aren't 20 young gypsy men at my military base tomorrow, I will come out here in my jeep and personally shoot dead 20 young gypsy men on the spot. And he got his men.
That made him an offer that couldn't refuse. Well, what do you think about all this, Mark?
Well, I think it's several interesting possibilities that could happen that people don't normally think about. I think some of the things say that probably is about, a war might start, maybe be a world war, but earth changes and stuff might kick in, and they might not even be able to fight. It might be so bad.
Yeah, that's what this guy was writing in Houston that saw what was going to happen. He said that there may even be threats from outer space, but it wouldn't be until after the World War started up and there was total chaos here in this country.
Well, there was some reports, I think it was out of one of the Air Force bases, missile bases up in North Dakota, I think Minot, something like that. And they've had several reports there that apparently after a UFO visited them, they pretty much lost complete control of their base, including their nuclear missiles. And this didn't just happen once. It's happened apparently several times. I don't know, last year sometime I read that it seemed like an awful lot of those people that were up at that base all of a sudden weren't working there anymore.
Oh, there was a cheating scandal.
Maybe they didn't want anybody talking. But it could be very possible that they might try to launch and start something, start a nuclear war, and UFOs could come in and just shut it all down. Stop it. And they would probably have a right to do that because there's a possibility that us doing the nuclear stuff actually affects things in other part of the galaxy, solar system, wherever, that we're not even aware of what it does, and it'll rip apart time space or something. So they may have a legal right to come in here as a defensive action and interfere and stop stop nuclear activity.
Well, that's kind of goes along with some of those movies you've seen, like talk about the Battle of Armageddon, and all of a sudden the weapons don't work anymore, and so forth. By miraculous means, or something.
Of course, the only problem with it is also we may be going. There's some evidence in our weather and different things. We may be going into a possible full magnetic reversal of the planet. And if that happens, you can actually have natural nuclear explosions.
People, you're fading on, man. I have to plug myself in.
Okay. Yeah, keep going, Mark.
So, yeah, you can literally have all hell coming loose. Because you can have magnetic field reverse. If you look, there's a guy that wrote a book, Robert Felix wrote a book called Magnetic Reversals. And in that book, it's a fairly quick read, pretty simple, but it's pretty well done. But it goes over different events and the geologic evidence for what can happen during a magnetic reversal. And you get all kinds of stuff coming at you from the sky, you know, micro diamond stuff, literally falling out of the sky. You know all those mammoths that they found that were frozen and they could still eat them? Well, you hear that they had stuff in their mouth and hadn't been digested, so they were frozen pretty fast. You know, literally probably before they could hit the ground. Well, what you don't hear very often is they also had their tusks were full of holes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like little micrometeorites or micro diamonds. And
yeah,
you literally get stuff raining out of the sky. I mean, you're talking micro diamonds, iridium, all kinds of compounds, heavy hydrocarbons. The Mayans talk about bitumen oil raining from the sky. And when I first read that, I thought, that seems kind of strange. You know, how would that happen? Well, it is actually happening right now. Out in our solar system, out on, I believe it's the Titan, the moon of Saturn, it rains oil.
Well,
and
back about 18
one of the unique characteristics of Titan is it has almost zero magnetic field. So if our magnetic field reverses for some period of time, our magnetic field would probably potentially completely collapse and go to zero. And at that point in time, we could have hydrocarbons raining from the sky, oil. Well, where would it come from? Well, if you look in the last, 5-7 years, if you look on the Internet and you do a search on methane releases from all over different places in the ocean, there's a large amount of methane going up in the atmosphere right now. And if that magnetic field reverses, goes to zero, all that methane could come back down.
Yeah.
Oil.
Well, I know in the 1850s...
May I interrupt with a question?
Yeah,
when the methane goes into the atmosphere, is its chemical composition changed? Is it break down or combined with anything, or does it mean methane?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure. All I know is that it's hydrocarbon material and the... magnetic reversals seem to trigger lots of hydrocarbons and all kinds of stuff to rain out of the sky and dump on you.
Well, Ed Dames talked about that in his talks about the kill shot. And everything above ground that wasn't shielded, you know, underneath at least a few inches of soil was killed.
Yeah, it's well. Also, the other thing that comes down on you is cosmic radiation, and that's the thing that causes all the genetic mutations. So when we see in the Earth's record, we see when all of a sudden all these life forms are gone and mass extinction events, and then all of a sudden all these new things show up. It's probably because of the cosmic radiation coming in and mutating the DNA.
Huh.
So there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, and if we So if we went in, I mean, in previous magnetic reversals, you have anywhere from about 55 to about 95% of all life, everything is wiped. So that would pretty much make anything these other guys doing on the banking system, all that, pretty much irrelevant.
Yeah.
Last time I had one of those.
When was the last time one of those happened, Mark?
Oh, I'm not sure. It's probably right before the last ice age, or right around.
Okay.
13,000 years, 11,000
oh, yeah.
something years. It's hard to tell because this radio dating on the carbon dating and stuff. Well, that depends upon the decay rate remaining stable. So if you have something happening in the Earth's cosmic radiation or stuff like that, that could actually change the dynamics of how that carbon dating is done. So it wouldn't be reliable past a certain period of time. So for probably from now until, you know, say 11, 12,000 years ago, it's probably reliable. Once you go further back in history, you're going to hit points in time where that fluctuated and the carbon dating is probably no longer reliable.
I've heard them say the same thing at Thunderbolts of the Gods, pointing
mm-hmm.
out problems with those aging techniques.
Right. I think that's where some of the they've detected places on Earth in the past where they thought, they said, well, if we didn't know any better, we would have thought there was a nuclear bomb or something go off here. There's a place in India, I think out in the African desert. I think actually out in, Death Valley, Nevada or somewhere out in there, I think they found some stuff too. So but those were probably natural nuclear explosions. That's a possibility. So we could have all kinds of stuff. I mean, and the other thing that people don't think about is what happens if those magnetic fields go down enough? How does that affect a person and just their thinking? It could have a lot of people whacking out. I mean, if people lose it on their borderline when you have full moons and stuff, and there's just a little bit of extra gravitation that throws some people over the edge. Imagine what happens when, you know, you all of a sudden just don't have a magnetic field.
Well, there's something
that's
to be
why
said
I think a lot of these cultures, native cultures, they talk about when you go into they tie it to the period of the three what's called the 3 days of darkness or time of darkness. And their advice then is, you know, you be somewhere safe and you remain very calm. You have a good frequency pattern of naturally occurring materials around you, not a lot of synthetic crap.
Like
so
cannabis
dirt.
Burning?
Huh?
Like burning cannabis around you?
Yeah. So, because and you don't go out somewhere because you don't get caught up in it all. So the idea, I think, is to try to keep yourself mentally stable enough to try to get through it.
lots of bags of Doritos, right?
Yeah, right. There you go. Mentally stable. Give me a break. Isn't there some other option B or something?
Oh, yeah.
So, how far are you people from Nashville?
I'm 85-90.
Oh, that's not so bad.
Halfway in between Nashville and Knoxville.
That's not so hot. I didn't think of better locations. What the heck?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm only 50 miles from a nuclear plant.
Location, location, location.
Yeah. Well, I've been looking, you know, very closely at Timbuktu.
That sounds like a good option these days. Yeah, Timbuktu. Her decimal spot is second place in the world.
How far away from that is what the barbers or whatever, right? What water is that? How far away from your area?
You talking about me?
Timbuktu, anyway.
Well, they're down in the Sahara someplace.
Oh, I didn't know how far that was.
Central African Republic.
Yeah, you know, the thing about is, you wonder about is how many of those nuclear plants in the United States are built on fault lines?
Probably all of them. They probably put them there on purpose. I would.
Yeah.
Well, I think Mexico and Central America, well, matter of fact, the guy that wrote this, the guy from Houston that talked about what he saw in this dream, he said the United States was in total chaos, but everything was pretty well chilled out in Mexico and Central America.
Uh-huh. Duh. Well, I hope they're doing better.
Well, at least, you know, I interviewed an Ethiopian. He's a Jew, but his he descends from Jews out of Ethiopia. And I interviewed him 10 years ago. And a couple years after that, he went to Belize. And while he was down there, a song that he wrote became very popular on the radio. And then there was a nationwide strike because they doubled the price of bread. And
that always helps.
He became so popular, they're actually talking about drafting him to become prime minister of the country. So he left. But he said, people here in the United States, he says, they can't even survive a tropical storm, much less a revolution like he saw in Belize. It's just people are, they're just not used to, you know, plucking chickens and, you know, digging their own food and stuff like that. So, you know, places like, you know, northern Mexico, I know, like around Zaragoza, northern Mexico, it's very hot and dry, but there's a lot of water, an unlimited amount of water for irrigation.
Okay.
So the entire town is completely surrounded by orchards and vineyards, and and everybody's got a horse. And that's where the Cherokee Nation of Mexico had their annual celebration until the drug cartels took it over. And it's a battleground right now. But the way things are going, the civil militias will probably get things back under control again because they're getting support from the federal government down there and arresting the police and everybody else that's been in cahoots with the drug cartel. So things are actually evening out down in Mexico. It might be a better place to live.
Not for my money. I got a sister that lives down there in Mexico. She's nuts. Her and her stupid Norwegian-American boyfriend that live down in Mexico of all places. Whatever. I think it's because it's cheap. I don't know. I wouldn't live down there.
Whereabouts is she?
The Villa Siesta Margarita Marijuana. I don't know. Some damn place.
Okay, so she's in a colony. Okay. Yeah, there's lots of...
Yeah, it's like an American colony. This
American
is for low-class Americans. They kind of live in trailer parks, okay?
Yeah, American expats, yeah. I mean, for what you can live in a trailer park here in the United States, you can live in a small villa and have and hire a gardener and a cook.
I guess that's the attraction. I don't know.
Sure.
But, it wouldn't be for me. I'd like to go overseas somewhere. Ha-ha.
And
wish I were younger.
If you can get a social,
okay, guys,
if you have a social security,
you say what? Chicago's going to go with over the top first. Sounds like a good pick. That's a good place to burn down. I hate that place too. It sucks.
That's what Joseph Smith said, and at that time Chicago was just a boat dock with a couple of buildings, and Nauvoo was the biggest city in Illinois, and but you know 45 people got killed over Easter weekend there. They're calling it Chirac.
Oh, that's a shame. Oh man. Oh well. I'm not going to worry about it. I used to be a libertarian. Now I'm a pirate. It's every man for himself. That's yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum.
So you're a freebooter.
Yeah, I mean, what's left? Organized resistance is futile.
Yeah. Enjoy the
Borg. It's like a follow the Roman Emperor.
Yeah, just enjoy it. Why fight him? Just join the Borg, right?
Yeah, like Alaric the Red, the guy who stormed Rome in the year 410. He was the one that brought it all down. That's what we need now, just somebody to bring it all down.
The barbarians are at the gates, right?
Yeah, yeah, anybody will do. I mean, I'm not fussy. Chinese will do. There's plenty of them.
Oh, man. Oh, you're great entertainment. I'll tell you. What's wrong with those guys down there in Texas that didn't want to have you on? Oh, man. We're crazy here. You know, they're... we've got a new version of Prophecy Keepers for the youth now. It's called Prophecy Keepers with a Z. And a guy by the name of Mac Boogaloo is running that part of it. And he's kind of liking me and Mark to Batman and Robin. So I guess you're the Joker, huh?
I'll take anything I can get. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, folks, by the way, if you're listening live and you'd like to call and talk with our guest, the number to call is 347-996-3318. Come join the party. It's one of those shows. We're having fun. And I know you and I are old men. If you're getting short on bladder, let me know and I'll run a little music for a minute.
Do you guys satanic rockabilly we can play for, like, mood music?
Oh, let's see. What have I got here?
I did a Google, and there actually is satanic rockabilly. They call it psychobilly, and it's a song called the Satanic Stomp.
Well, let's see. I bet I can come up with something here. let's see. Let's see. I've got some pretty strange stuff here. Just let me have a look here for a second, and I'll come up with something. John Wayne, America, Why I Love Her. Not what you had in mind. Okay, let's see here. Oh, here we go. Oh, this is perfect. This is Hoyt Axton, Beelzebub's Laughter. 2 minutes and 40 seconds. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Okay.
Night has come to the Vietnam jungle. Rain falls into the wide open eyes of Captain Flynn and Corporal Miranda, sprawled in the mud there where they have died. And night has come to the children of China. They follow the lies of a false unicorn, and his madness is burning the minds of the children whose children shall never be born. Sometimes I feel that it just can't be real. This world's in a spiral. Playgrounds, popcorn, and pink cotton candy. Disneyland daytimes dance in the eyes of freckled-faced, t-shirted, milk-drinking babies who never have ever seen fire in the sky. Sometimes I feel that it's candy, Disneyland daytimes dance in the eyes of freckled-faced, t-shirted, milk-drinking babies who never have ever seen fire.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You know, one time we had a hail bomb for 12 hours. When it was all over, I walked up. We didn't find one of them, not one stinking big body. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill. Smells like... victory. Someday this war's gonna end.
Everything come all right?
Oh, great, man. Yeah, I had me a bowl of you-know-what. And you want to hear a weed story from Vietnam?
Yeah.
Okay, this I've been in three wars. I only did one brave thing once in three whole stinking wars, and I did it while I was on weed in Vietnam. I was on weed in Darvon. Here's the thing. Normally, my unit was out in the middle of the bush fighting the NVA in big battles and blah, blah, blah. But we also had to do odd jobs. And one of the odd jobs we had to do is one day they came in and pulled off my squad, and my squad had to provide security for this bulldozer guy who was knocking down bush for some government installation about halfway between Saigon and Ben Hoa, just off the main highway. So our squad, my squad, would just follow him around, and we were, like, supposed to be security for him. And this went on for a couple of days. And this was a terrible job because when this guy would knock down the bush, all the insects would jump up, and they would come attack us all and just bite the whole heaven crap out of you all day long. It was the worst crap I ever did in Vietnam, worse than beating the bush any day. And we got talking to this guy. He's making like $1 million a year. He's a civilian. And, you know, we were GIs, and we were making like nothing. We're probably going to get killed tomorrow. We were like throwaway infantry. And walking out there the next day, I thought, gee, that's the luckiest guy in the whole world, and I'm the most unlucky son of a bitch in the whole world right now. And all of a sudden, one shot rang out and went right through his fucking head and killed him dead on the fucking spot.
Oh.
So I thought, uh-oh, maybe he's not so lucky after all. So off we go. My squad has to go look for the sniper. And as luck would have it, it's my turn to be point man. So I'm going off in the general direction where we think the sniper is and work through some bush. And about 30 meters in front, I see a hooch, which is obviously a military kind of thing. It's not the kind of thing a civilian would use. It's kind of, you know, poncho and some other crap. So I figured that's where he's been. I don't know if there's a platoon of him there or just him or if he's not there or what. So I hold up a grenade as a signal to the guys behind me that I'm going to throw a grenade. So I throw the fucking grenade. And then, because I'm high on a kite, I've been eating Darvon and smoking weed all fucking morning because of the fucking insects. I'm really pissed, too. I'm pissed and I'm high on a kite, and if the grenade goes off, boom, I charge just like in the fucking movies, man. Just like Audie Murphy. Just like in Hollywood shit. Bang, bang, bang. Die, you mother, bang, 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 bang. Here's the punchline. When my grenade rolled into this fucking hooch-like thing, it rolled under a box of propaganda leaflets, like, fuck you, GI, go fuck yourself, all you, that kind of stuff, like propaganda leaflets, and it blew this box sky high, and it all came down like confetti all over the fucking place. And the guys behind me just all started laughing, rolling around the ground, because there's obviously nobody there. I was the only one doing any shooting, and all this confetti was raining down the ground. And instead of getting a fucking medal for charging the enemy single-handed, all I got was a fucking laughing stock of the squad.
So you all marched back to your base singing the Mickey Mouse song. Chuhoy. Yeah, Didi Mao, right, okay.
I'm trying to get this phone to operate.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, do you like Leonard Cohen?
Hang on there, fellas. Yeah, I think I'm back now.
Okay. Yes, if you're having some problem, I can roll "The Road to Hell" by Leonard Cohen.
I'm back online now. I assume. I'm embarrassing you people with all this crap.
Oh no! Everyone.
Yeah, this isn't exactly the kind of stuff you're going to get in Reader's Digest, my man.
No. Every once in a while, we have a show. We have like six native guys, and it's a real party. You know, we've had a few shows, and Mark, isn't that right, Mark? We've had some memorable shows, haven't we? We've had a few that were really funny, and it kind of get raucous. Some of them are very, very serious, but it's fun sometimes. I'm catching a contact high from you, and you're 2,000 miles away. Well, it was fun to have you here.
I encourage people to come out here. It's a nice place.
It is. Washington's a nice place. It's if you don't mind a little rain, and if you like blackberries.
I hate these stupid cell phones.
You're doing fine. I can hear you. You're having problems hearing us, right?
Gentlemen, I'm having so much trouble on my end with this battery that I'm going to thank you for letting me on your show and say goodbye, okay?
That's fine.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, you bet. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you later. And let's see, Mark, why don't you and I talk for a while here? So what have you had any thoughts here for the last couple of weeks since we last spoke?
Oh, not a whole lot. We're getting more planting done. I think you're
doing some
planting too.
Me too. Yeah, we've. The first time. See, I've always had a wife that knew how to do gardening, so I'm starting plants from seeds and. Made the mistake of not getting enough sunlight, so they got too leggy. But I'm learning.
Yeah.
Chewing up the backyard with a tiller.
Mm-hmm.
And my peas are doing real well. They've been in the ground for, I don't know, about two and a half weeks now, and they love the rain. And potatoes are going in next, and plus whatever else we can manage to get in. But, yeah, if you're going to do a garden, if you're thinking about doing a garden, folks, now this is the year to start one. And, I know a lot of people are feeling the pinch. And my friend Alan Snow came by yesterday, and I know a lot of people that are really being prompted to grow big gardens this year. And, So what kind of stuff are you planting?
We got onions, we got beets, and snow peas, and
how are you doing your
types of lettuce?
What do you buy the little tiny onion sets, or what are you doing?
No, we got some from our own stock from previous. So most of our seed is from previous plants from. Previous gardens.
Yeah, this will be the third year for my asparagus patch.
Asparagus is good. You really don't get much out of it until like the third year, I guess, right?
Yeah, this is the third year, and I'm also going to plant, because they're about 18 inches apart, so I'm going to put all kinds of other stuff in between, because you can grow all kinds of companion plants. You just have to look at your companion planting guide and figure out what you're going to do. And now's the time. And there's lots of resources. You know, while the internet's available, you know, learn how to garden.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, squash is good, too. I grew a bunch of squash last year. Squash is good because you can just store it, and you don't have to can it or anything, and it lasts. We're still eating squash from last year right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Potatoes and squash, you can, dig a little pit in the ground and put straw bales around it, and you can dump your squash and potatoes in there and keep it cool or put it underneath the house. As long as it's cool, they'll last for a long time, and that's your staple crops is corn, beans, and squash. And
yep.
Corn takes a lot of area to grow. And
I had that problem. I had some of the Hopi corn, and I grew it for a couple of years, and just took a lot of space. And it also, I had a problem with the rats and stuff like to get up on it and chew on it and stuff. And I didn't want to sit out there with a shotgun all night long. the other thing was interesting about the corn that I noticed was the bees. I mean, the bees absolutely love corn pollen.
Oh, yeah.
It's like bee catnip.
Oh, yeah.
They love that.
Well, when I live in Crestone, we had a, I think the place, it's probably about a half an acre, and it was deer fenced, and there were... The guy that had built the place put in 80 fruit trees, and they had been neglected. So I was making good money at the time, and I put in a complete state-of-the-art Israeli drip system. And, oh, my gosh, nectarines, pears, apples, you name it. And they were all dwarf varieties. He had chosen Siberian rootstock. Matter of fact, the week we moved in, we had most of the trees were already starting to blossom, and we're talking the third week of March, and we were scared to death because it was getting 17, 14 degrees overnight, but because we lived up on didn't live down in the bottom of the San Luis Valley, we were on an incline at the base of 14,000-foot mountains, and at about 8,100 feet. And because the airflow was either going up or coming down the mountain, the air never settled, so they never froze. Very good planning on his part. And he had a 15-by-15-foot root cellar that was plumbed with water and electricity. And it was on a backup battery system, and the house was, but it was 12-sided, so it was for all intents and purposes it was round, and it had an attached garage with a two-story apartment. So we had a friend, Dottie Daigle, John Red Hat's medicine helper. After he passed away, Dottie lived there with us for a year. And, it was a lot of fun, great fun, a lot of storage space, and it was very well planned. The house was a little small, but the guy had built a 35-foot greenhouse with 35-foot on the south side of the house, and they also had some about 20 more feet of inboard for winter crops that was close to the house, so it didn't get and the greenhouse never did get below 45 degrees because he had a solar hot water array attached to 655-gallon drums, and that kept the greenhouse warm enough to grow in there all winter long, and they just used
that's a good idea.
Oh, yeah, and we just used the CFL lighting that was had the full spectrum. So, you could just grow stuff there. Just unbelievable, at 8,000 feet. And it was so, wonderful, wonderful place to live, and too high. you're not used to the elevation, it can cause some real problems, and it did. And but what's your elevation there? About 6,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a big difference between that and 8,000.
Oh yeah.
You can actually breathe down where you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're,
well,
you're
we go up in the mountains a lot and go hiking and stuff. So.
Oh.
But
my.
you can acclimate, and you can also do things to get your blood work and pull in more oxygen, get some more chlorophyll and stuff, and boost yourself up a little bit. So.
Well, we moved from 1,300 feet, and we actually I actually bought a couple of used oxygen concentrators that first 6 weeks. Oh, man. I mean, I could hardly get in and out of the bathtub. It was bad. Oh, man, it was bad. You know, they start pressurizing airplane cabins at 8,000 feet. And, yeah, it was a real challenge. But and Mary Summerrain said in one of her books that, you know, 7,000 feet is really the ideal place to live, because just living there keeps your heart well-toned. Because it has to work a little harder than it does at down at lower elevations. And you're also above a lot of the air strata that would be involved, say, if there were major epidemics and so forth and so on. And she never did disclose where she lived. But I suspect that she probably lived somewhere up around in that area.
I think that's probably right. Yeah, most of the people, you look at the world, all over the world, where people tend to live longer and have longer lifespans.
Uh-huh.
Now, they're usually in the mountains.
Drinking glacial milk.
Yeah.
I think they also found that
if you're in a certain area and the airflow moves through and it moves across a colder area, it sets up a special energy pattern or something. They theorized that helped too. And just several things. So the whole environment and, you know, a lot of factors, but you know, I think an awful lot of people that live longer, had longer lives, usually were in mountain areas.
Well, they've discovered a lot of the really ancient people. They lived up on high ridges or near mountain tops because they had more sun exposure in the winter. It was easier to see people coming and going below you. It was actually warmer up at higher elevation than it was down the lower elevations because the cold air pooled. And but I know the San Luis Valley was a very sacred place. The Indians, they didn't go in it except during the daytime and pretty much only for ceremonial purposes. And when the Spanish first got there, they call it San Luis Lake because it was several feet of water. And nowadays, they grow about 40% of the potatoes in the country there. Water table is down 10 or 15 feet because they've been constantly pumping. The actual valley floor is about 7,000 feet below, you know, where the soil is. It's all come down. It's alluvial. So it's alluvial soil, and the water has a negative charge. In the northern part of the valley, everything's organic. They have people grow yak and all kinds of interesting things in the area. And between Crestone and Alamosa is one of the possible sites for Sipapu. So it was pretty close to Great Sand Dunes National Monument. It was a really, really enchanted place, and really enjoyed being there. And we were, if you went right over the mountain from Crestone, I think you'd be in like Gardner or someplace like that. It was a gorgeous place. Really beautiful.
We used to have some land not too far from there, down in Pagosa Springs.
Oh, yeah.
Not too far away.
You remember your C.W. McCall? Yeah, ended up in the middle of the feed store in downtown Pagosa Springs. Yeah, I think I still got his album. Here comes a Silverton up from Durango. Here comes a Silverton shoveling coal. And great, you have to be at my age to really probably remember C.W. McCall was a banker that decided he wanted to play music, and he came up with a hit album, I think in the mid-70s, songs like Convoy and...
Yeah, a CB song, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there were some really, really, really interesting songs. I'm sure you could download it about anywhere. They're probably on YouTube. I haven't checked them, but yeah, you can check out C.W. McCall. Quite an interesting guy. Yeah, that area that, and I know that area, there was a guy between Monticello and Cortez that had bought a building that serviced a cell tower, and he turned it into a hardened home, and he was selling that for several million dollars. I ran across that on the internet a few days ago. I know a few years ago there was a place up in the mountains about 25 miles north of Cortez that was built like an egg, you know, sprayed concrete, and then they backfilled over it. And all that was above ground was a garage and a cupola, but it was served by its own springs and had a complete solar array, and it was really neat. Elevation's a little too high, though. I think anything above about 7,000 feet, yeah, you better be in pretty good shape if you're going to go live in a place like that.
Yeah. Well, some people, just their design can handle it better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Some people actually do better. I mean, I tend to do a little bit better at higher elevations. I remember I go out mountains and stuff, and we'd get out there, and people say, well, you have to acclimate and stuff, and they'd be running around, and people would get the, you know, altitude sickness.
Yeah,
I'd be doing fine. Everybody else is going in down in town to the doctor's office.
Yeah, well, you're.
I said, what's the problem here? This is great.
Yeah, well, you're a skinny guy, and you have less requirement for oxygen than
some
people.
Yeah, well, so it just depends, but and people can do some things to help their oxygen intake if they need to. But
oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about that. And
which one of the guys, Native Americans, said that he wanted to be what, above like 4,400 feet, sighting the thing out there in Salt Lake City, Utah? You know, the marker there at the temple, Mormon temple up there, and
mm-hmm.
He said there was an elevation on it. He said he saw, like, parts of this building falling down in his vision.
Oh, that's Mad Bear Anderson.
Mad Bear, okay, yeah. So,
yeah, back in 72.
And there was some kind of marker or something out there had an altitude on it.
Yeah, I just played the two parts of the Native American Unity, I can't remember what's, but I played it recently. You can... it's in the archives, but recordings of Mad Bear and Thomas Bunyakya and some really interesting people back from 1972 from that event. Back in those days, some really interesting things that were going on, and I believe Rolling Thunder was there also. But in keeping with, that was kind of a dark program tonight. I think we'll go out with The Road to Hell by Leonard Cohen. Cohen. And we'll see everybody the next time we get together. Mac Boogaloo is arranging for me to go on some other people's programs, so I'll keep everybody informed about what's going on. And I'm glad Mac came along, because I've last couple of years I've kind of been, you know, losing steam and resting on laurels, but it's glad to have a little bit more youth injected, you know, in it, and cause I gotta be 60 in December, and I'm slowing down a little bit, but Now is not the time to slow down. So we will endeavor to persevere.
Well, Creator always opens up some pathways, huh?
Well, yeah, that was I just quoted Chief Dan George from the outlaw Josie Wales. We shall endeavor to persevere.
That's the one where the Indian squaw snuck up and behind him and said, only an Indian can do that or something. And he got snuck up on and she showed him up.
Yeah, he said he'd been to see the great father in Washington, and the great father had told him, I want you to endeavor to persevere. So we will endeavor to persevere. Thanks a lot, folks. We'll see you hopefully soon. And thanks a lot, Mark. Talk with you later.
All right, bye.
Good night now.
Get ready for the future. It is murder. Hiroshima. Destroy another fetus now. We don't let children in and out. I've seen the future, baby. It is murder.
When they say,